Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 167. You can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode167. Okay, so today we are talking process, production process, the process of putting on a play, and more specifically, solving the problems that often come up during that process. How many times have you looked at a play, you read it, you loved it, and the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh, we can't do this play, right? Okay, so we're going to talk to two teachers and co-directors, Dee Sutter and Tracy Duffin, and they put on my play, The Gift, last year. And based on some really awesome pictures I saw from the production, knew I wanted to have them on the podcast. They came up with so many unique solutions. And instead of saying, we can't do this play, these co-directors went to the mat. This is a great, great discussion on problem solving, creative problem solving, and directing. So let's get to it. All right. I am speaking with Dee Sutter. Hello, Dee.
Hello.
And Tracy Duffin. Hello, Tracy.
Hello.
All right. So both of these folks are directors. What school are you directing? Are you at?
We're at Custer County District High School in Miles City, Montana.
Awesome. Teachers and directors. And they co-directed a play of mine called The Gift. And they sent such amazing pictures and just talked about, to me, some of the different choices that they made that I thought this would be a really good conversation about. You know, what is this process that they went through? And I know that so many of you go through. So guys, let's start from the very beginning. What are you thinking about? What are you looking at when it comes to choosing a play for your school and for your students?
Well, I suppose like most high school theater programs, we are always long on girls, short on men. We run our program as an extracurricular. We have a theater class, but we also do the play as an extracurricular. So we run it as we take all comers. So we announce an audition, and then from the amount of people, the numbers that we get auditioning, we try to pick a play that we can handle.
Oh, so you guys audition first and then figure out your pool and then pick a play?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It requires a lot of footwork in advance because you have to have read quite a few and have, you know, quite a catalog of things, of plays that you can go to.
Do you have do you come to your season with like a short list or?
Usually, yes. And we try to mix it up again with comedy and drama and then something someone's heard of. So if they wanted to go off and do something with acting, they can say, I played a certain character. I was in Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And so that's really, I really like, because that really says to me that you're student-centered. Like it's really about showcasing your students.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Do you guys always co-direct, or is this something that just happened this time, or?
We've actually done 20 plays together.
Oh my God. Awesome. Oh, okay. So,
We have quite a collection of posters upstairs of all of the plays that we've done, but I'm retiring this year, so Dee's a little confused as to what's going to happen next year.
Dismayed.
It's all going on your shoulders, Dee, and you're going to be the one.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so once you have your students audition, and you've chosen the play based on your talent pool, what's the next step for you guys?
Then obviously we put our actors in our slots. Now your play was quite a bit larger than we could handle, but I loved it so much. I love a good dramedy, and I just love the O. Henry aspect to it as something classic that the kids wouldn't be able to hang on to. And so I took the script home in my bag and kept looking at it and looking at it until I could shoehorn it into the cast that we had. So that's why we made some of the very weird, odd choices that we did with this play. Because I called Tracy over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I said, I think I've got it figured out. We can do this play.
Well, some of them. And like, because you have, actually, you made some really ingenious choices, I would say. So this play is sort of a very abstract. There's mentions of Gift of the Magi, and there's also mentions of what does it mean to be a selfish person, and what does it mean to be a selfless person. So just in terms of having all of these characters in this play, there's two characters who are, depending on how you cast them, they're brother sister, or they're two, you know, or they're brother brother, or sister sister, however it works. But you guys took the two characters and made one of them talk to a puppet. So one of them was real and one of them was a puppet.
The puppet voice. He voiced the puppet differently. And you know, honestly, we were amazed at how well it worked with making that choice, because the other one, one of the halves of that character was very sarcastic and kind of naughty. And so that one became the monkey.
The monkey puppet.
It worked because we kind of played it so that the Taylor character was a nice guy, but he wanted to say mean stuff. So he made the puppet say all the mean stuff.
Awesome. I think that is a great way of, you know, because I get calls all the time. It's like, look, can we cut these characters? Can we do this? And sort of like, well, you know, it's what's the intention of the script here, and how can we maintain that? And I think that this is an example of, we can't have these two characters. We can only have one. How do we maintain the intention of the characters and the intention of the script with only one person? And I think that's a great choice. Go ahead.
It fed into the whole idea. You have the popular crowd and you have the unpopular crowd. And what makes you more unlikable in high school than having a psychotic break right there? And yet, you know, some of those other characters were such nice, genuine characters. They still talk to him. They still put up with him. And then some of the other sarcastic comments, you know, and some of his lines were wonderful. The one that strikes me is the one, my goal is to not talk at all. Well, obviously you're a puppet. You shouldn't be talking, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny because they're really, I don't know, I've just been in so many schools where I'm not sure I've met a kid who talked to a puppet, but I've met lots of kids who were on that edge.
Right.
And I have seen people around them just treat them as human beings.
Right.
You know, right. And also, you know, there's, we have so many stories about people like that who are not treated like human beings. And so it's a very interesting, it's a lovely choice, and just just showing some creativity right off the bat, where instead of saying, well, we can't do this play, you know, right. So, well, why not, you know, put your thinking caps on? What other choices did you make?
The other choice that we made, you had originally written the script, and we understand why, because it was a colossal part. You had your lead character as two different
versions actresses. Of herself.
Right, right. And, you know, to find in a small school, to find two girls that have enough bodily similarity to run that in the
that
middle
are great actors.
That are good actors, and then to run that in the middle of your as an abstract scene in the middle of the other scenes, we thought, oh my goodness, that's going to be really difficult. So what we made the choice of running all the flashback scenes as film, and we built a giant screen, and it shows up in this weird white square in the back of the theater space. And we had a projector hidden on stage, and my co-director was hidden behind
on stage.
A set piece, and she would load up and project all these little scenes. We had a very competent filmographer here, cinematographer, and he edited and filmed all those pieces on location in several locations around town. And then we showed them as film clips throughout the play.
Well, and I just like, it's what, again, it's a great, great choice. You know, when you're in a situation where it's just not going to be possible to bring something to life, again, how do you maintain the integrity of something and yet use the resources that you have at your disposal? And I think that the whole notion of bringing in a different form like that, like bringing in film, I think is perfect. I think it actually is. And I'm sure that it was, you know, your film, your film guy loved it.
Yeah. It was a great opportunity for him. He wanted to kind of get into more of that. He works out at the community college and he wants to do a film class. And I think it was a good opportunity for him to get to know some kids and figure out how they work. It was great for our actors, too, to see the difference between stage acting and film acting.
Oh, sure.
The Kim Kimberty character was we've had played by the same actress, and she did much better on stage than she did in film because she's almost too overt for film. She's used to being a stage actress, so she's just too big for film sometimes. Her facial expressions were too much. And then we had a couple of actors that were way better at film and were very good at the subtleties. So I thought that was a nice experience for some of our veteran actors as well.
Well, what an interesting experience for them to be able to, like in the moment, actually realize that there's it's a different rhythm, right? To act on stage than to act on screen.
Yes. And as you said, you know, we're pretty student-centered. We had two actors that were not going to be available the weekend of our performance.
Oh.
So we cast them as actors that were only in the film scenes. They didn't ever appear on stage. So we were able to accommodate that schedule for them and make it so Bob and Laura were only in film. Unfortunately, they were, you know, so they didn't get to ever come and take the vow, but they were still with us.
But they got to take part. I mean, and those are two very important characters. Like,
yes, they were very, very good actors, both of them, and we would have been sorry to not include them.
Well, it's a nice. Well, what a nice way to be able to do it. You know, I think that I think it works really well, and I think it's a great. You know, a lot of times I hear from I'm beginning directors mostly that they have trouble. They want to do it exactly as it appears on the page, and they have trouble visualizing any other way. And I just think that that's another reason that I wanted to talk to you guys is because that you just, you know, in these two wonderful examples of just visualizing how you use the what you've got at your disposal and still being able to do the play. I think that's great.
Excellent. I'm glad you agree.
Oh, yeah. We all agree. We're all in the same boat here. Okay, so how is it for you as directors if you're not picking the play until you're sort of in motion? You know, what is your process like in terms of thinking about the play and the vision and the theme and all of those directorial things? Do you work on the fly? Do you not worry about it and sort of see what the students bring? What's your director's process as you move forward?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously when we picked the play and we said, okay, we're going to do this, then you make all those decisions. I mean, I made the decision to do the filming right in the beginning. We talked about it. I said, you know, I counted it up. I said, there's a quarter of this page, 25 pages are done as film. Can we pull that off? And it's in small enough pieces that the texture of it worked. The longer clips weren't until you were so invested in watching the play, it wouldn't have become annoying as audience. So, I mean, I think that helped. So I went through your script and I had gotten the electronic copy. So I just kind of highlighted, put a big stripe down. Okay. And then looked back and said, okay, where are these film clips going to happen? And is that going to work visually? And then from there, came up with the idea that, you know, to try to make the set as easy as possible, you know, first of all, your teacher character was kind of flighty, kind of.
We made her never ever met a drama teacher like her at all. Never ever.
We thankfully we cast a young lady who is a dancer.
Oh, so cool.
She was perfectly comfortable sitting there in extended child pose. So it was hysterical, and she was just so funny, and she was wearing yoga pants and flowy clothes and was just very, very fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun thing. It's funny that Dia's talking about, okay, well, all these creative decisions were getting made. Okay, Dia's an art teacher, and I'm a government teacher. So she's like, all these, you know, oh, we it's going to be fine. And then I go and make a spreadsheet of the page numbers and which is film and then where it's going to be set. The Kim and Kimberly character needed 16 costume changes.
Holy cow.
I know. Thank you very much. That was insane.
Yeah. See, I would just like throw everybody in one costume and go, okay, you're wearing this for the whole thing.
we decided early on that we wanted them to be in like the same color. So it was obvious that who was who. So we put Kim in pink. And so we were just surveying the entire cast of women. Okay. Who has pink stuff? So we had enough costumes for poor Kim, but it was something else. But she's like all these creative things, and I'm trying to figure out how the heck are we going to do that?
This is why we're a great team. She handles all the checklists.
I was just about to say.
Yeah, she makes sure the poster is out and up so that we can get some people in the seats and, you know.
I think
make sure the bills get paid.
I think that's a perfect teamwork when it comes to directing something, to have somebody who makes sure all the trains run on time and to have somebody who's like, I think the train should be sparkles and like, and we should have a film projector on the train, you know, like it just means that everything's getting taken care of.
And part of it is obviously we've been doing this for a really long time, and part of this play was also a nod to everything we've ever done. We had play posters from a lot of the plays that we've produced. We had set pieces that we had built for other plays that we brought out and put on those shelves, and wigs and costumes. And
I put every script on Miss G's desk.
I'm going to put some pictures in the show notes, but the play takes place for majority of it in a drama classroom. And it's just beautiful. Like, I just love there's a chaos to the set. I love how you hung chairs, you know, from the ceiling. It's a very tactile and all in, it's a vertical set.
Yes.
We wanted it to look like the play closet, but people can actually walk there.
Yeah, with lockers and I just think, I think that that's a, you know, it's a very accessible set, like in terms of, it's very creative, but it's not complicated. Does that make sense? You know, right. That it's very vivid.
I think that when I always have felt that when the curtain opens, the audience should have just like this visual treat, mm-hmm. you know, and they should know exactly where you are before mm-hmm. anyone says a word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is Miss G's mind a little bit.
Right. Right.
No. And I think that, I think that's amazing too. I mean, I'm a real believer in, you know, if you really wanted to, you could throw two cubes on stage, and if you had to, you could take one cube away, you know, just in terms of, we work with a lot of schools and a lot of teachers who don't have stages and who are, you know, it's the cafeteria floor and need that flexibility. But there is something to be said for a visual thesis, you know, and a visual, absolutely, we take things in visually. Theater is a visual medium.
Right. Well, and also we put that stuff out early enough so that the kids could then feed off it as well. You know, some of the best moments were when kids went back and they picked up something that we hung on the wall and then used it.
Yeah. They had a little sword fight. They put on some hats.
You know, yeah.
Things kids do when they've got toys to play with.
No, totally. And it's sort of like, and then it becomes they're in an environment. They're not in a set.
Now, I don't know if I sent you the picture of the characters in the Marge Simpson wig.
I don't know if
I do not have that one.
It says that they're supposed to be like lovers from an ancient time. The characters that were boyfriend and girlfriend. So we made them Homer and Marge Simpson.
It's the pair that never got to present their thesis. And I said, okay, whatever costume you're in, you have that time break where they have obviously presented while the audience was watching the film piece and they're done. But I said, you have to have something on so that the audience goes, what direction did they go with their So they were Marge and Homer.
Oh my God.
In the back, so it worked out.
Yeah.
And she's talking about all the creative stuff. And I'm thinking, boy, it was so really helpful to not have to put anything away. The ladder was on stage. The duct tape was on stage. You know, we were able to use all the stuff that you would have on your stage. And you usually have to clean up. We just left it there.
Again, I don't think I've ever been in a really neat drama classroom. It's sort of an explosion of everything.
Definitely Miss G is way neater than... Well, then ours.
So what are your rehearsals like?
We usually go right after school for about an hour and a half. We go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So yeah, Wednesday night is church night. And so we practice 4 days a week. And then when we get right down to the end, we might throw in a Saturday to build set or a Saturday to practice. One of the other unusual things that we've worked out over the years, the week of the production, we usually like to do a free show, sometimes for a classroom. And then we also do our cast party before we actually have the production so that we get our bang for our buck with the bonding of the cast before we're done. Because we find that, you know, this is such a huge commitment in a high school kid's life that when it's over, they want to run for the hills and get caught up on their geometry. Mm-hmm. So we clean up and clear the stage the night after the last play. And then they're off to whatever their next commitment is, be it tennis or track or whatever it is.
Yeah. I've never heard that. And I think what a fantastic idea. Like get the bonding, get the excitement, get everyone worked up, you know, in terms of togetherness.
Yeah. They don't really like each other and it's fun to sit down and eat a meal. And we usually try to show a film or something like that. That kind of goes with the theme of the play.
So what did you show?
I showed an old 80s film called Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yes, of course.
They loved it. I always try to find something that they've never seen.
Did you tell them it's the same as Pretty in Pink, only
better?
Different people? That's awesome. Okay, so what was your... Okay, let's talk about challenges. What were some challenges for you working on this play, aside from the 16 costume changes?
Well, just scheduling. Scheduling all those film scenes, because that was done outside of all those rehearsal hours, was difficult because, you know, obviously we had a couple of kids that had limited scheduling anyway. That's why they were in that part. And then scheduling to film and all those different takes and different places too. Our local community college has a nursing program. And so they had a faux hospital room set up. So that's where we did our filming of Laura in the hospital room.
That's awesome.
Yeah, went to a couple of different homes near the school to do some of those scenes that were done in the home and, you know, threw flour all over the kitchen.
That was my daughter's house. That was really popular.
That was crazy.
All you film people, they're always coming in and making a mess. That's cool. What do you feel was your biggest success?
I think the final product was very seamless. You know, I asked somebody that watched the play, I said, what did you think of the video thing? And she said, well, I was put off at first, but then I couldn't wait to see what happened. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that's difficult about your play is that the timeline is by no means continuous. You know,
I'm good that way.
You end with the scene of her getting ready to leave
to make the apology
to make the apology that you start with in, you know, the middle of act one. Do you know what I mean? So I think it took people a little while to wrap their brains around what was going on. But, you know, I think that's true of any complex plot, that it takes people a while to pick it up. Yes.
I think you hit it right on the head. If someone in the audience was like, oh, I didn't like it at first, and then was drawn in, that whole, right, that just having the little bits and then getting more and more into the story. I think that,
that's why, you know, Miss Organized Next to Me was so important in this play, because not only did she have these checklists and we're going to film this here and we're going to film this there, and these are the 12 things that we need to take with us. We need to take the wig. We need to have the hat. We need to have the jacket, you know, whatever, whatever it was also a big piece in getting that to work on film, was having those costumes in the right places. Because that scene where she is leaving for school, she has to be dressed in the same stuff as when she's at school making that apology. So we had to figure out on our little, or she did on her little thing, which day was which, so we could know what costume she was in, so that as people watched, they would get that timeline correct. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it was just, it's an ever moving tapestry, this thing.
Yes. Well, and you know, I mean, if we had done it the way you intended it, it wouldn't have been nearly as complicated. However, we can never settle for easy.
Well, why not? Why not? Why not stretch yourself to your, to as far as you can go?
To the point of uncomfortable. That's
what why not? How did your students feel about that? Like, if in terms of, this process?
Well, the actress that played Kim is by far our best actress. She might go on actually to an acting career, is her first choice. So it was a great opportunity for her not only to have the weight of that character playing both roles on her shoulders, but to stretch herself into film. And I hope she'll try it again someday, but she didn't like it that much. I hope she tries again. But yes, I think it was a stretch, and it's nice to take your best actor and push them to the edge of their talent.
Absolutely, totally. Okay, so as we wrap things up here, what's one thing that each of you would say when, you know, some people who are listening and they've looked at a play and they're like, oh, I couldn't do that. I don't have the cast for that. I don't have the... Oh, we'd have to change things. You know, the whole notion of thinking outside the box, the way you guys have done so well. How would you encourage somebody to do that?
I fell in love with the script, and I just wasn't going to let go. I wasn't going to let go until I figured out this problem. And I think you have to have that kind of commitment to what you're doing before those ideas come to you, you know? So you've got to have, you know, I don't know, the heart and the soul. I've got to do this. I've got to do this with these kids, because I can see this character as that character, and she's going to do so well. Mm-hmm. So, and also, I mean, we read a lot of scripts. We constantly have 10 to 15 to 20 sitting out there in the wings that we know are pretty good, and we just haven't met the kids yet to perform them.
Yes. So we do have a pile and go, oh yeah, this play will work with these guys, which is nice. And de-stick-to-itiveness definitely is something that I've come to trust. When we did a play not too long ago called The American Car, which I just love. Yeah. And she said, we've got a very small stage. And she said, we'll need 3 cars on stage. And I looked at her like she had grown extra heads. And we had a half a Volkswagen with functioning headlights, about a third of a minivan with the door opening, and a rusty Model T that she painted the other side of on a turntable.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it was insane, but yeah. She just says, we're going to work it out.
Yeah. I'm not afraid to, make things happen. Let's put it that way.
So that's my advice. Find someone who says, we can do this. And trust them.
That's lovely. I love that. 3 cars and a turntable. Absolutely. Okay, awesome. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Dee and Tracy. It's been a treat. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you, Dee and Tracy. So before we go, let's do some theater folk news. Since we did all this talking about The Gift, I wanted to tell you more about The Gift. So this is a full-length play. It's mine. I wrote it. I'm very, very pleased with it. It's characters to me. These characters in this play are very, they're just very lifelike. I want to believe that these characters exist really in the world somewhere instead of just on stage. But that's neither here nor there. And the play is inspired by the O. Henry short story, The Gift of the Magi, right? You know this Christmas tale, a husband and wife, they're very poor, they love each other. He's got a watch, she's got beautiful hair, and they both go to great extremes to buy a gift for the other. She cuts off her hair to get a watch chain, and he sells his watch to give her combs for her hair. And so, of course, they exchange these gifts, and it's all about love and selflessness, right? And thinking about other people. And what is the difference between being a selfish person and a selfless person? And that is the core of The Gift. What we have in The Gift is a main character. And her name is a couple. She goes through a couple of names, name transformation, among other things. Her name is Kimber Dee, and her family's been turned upside down. And because of that, she has had to come to grips with a lot of things. And she makes this transformation between selfish and selfless. And what that means to her relationships with the people in her class and her family and what her family's going through. And her relationships with people who remain selfish in this world that she lives in. A great big cast. It takes place, a lot of the action takes place in a drama class where the students are tasked with coming up with a creative interpretation of The Gift of the Magi. That's in there. So because of that, there's tons of characters, interesting characters, and with a lovely message to boot. That is The Gift, based on The Gift of the Magi. You can read sample pages at theaterfolk.com, or you can click the link in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode167. Finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. Search for that wonderful word, Theater Folk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.